So I chose this year to take a look at some of the Rashis surrounding the war. This is like the seventh year I've given shiurs, so we've covered a lot of the more famous Rashis of Lech Lecha. So make sure when you read Lech Lecha, you pay attention not just to the Rashis I'm discussing today, but the Rashis about Eretz Yisrael and the Rashis about the Haftachas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But what about the war? So when we read about the war of the four kings and the five kings, we just assume that it's backloaded. What I mean is backloaded. The reason the Torah describes the war is because we want to see Avram rescuing Lot. Because we want to see Avram meeting Malki Tzedek, some religious exchange. Because we want to see the Maestros, either Avram was Avimelech, Avimelech is Truma Samai. Because we want to see the Midos of Avram, that he wasn't greedy and he didn't want to take extra money that was due to him because of the war effort. But the beginning of the story, like, who cares? Who cares who these kings were? Who cares where they fought? Who cares who Kedar LaOmer was? And yet when you read the story, there are a lot of psukim that describe not just the lineups, each manager gives in their lineup, the four kings and the five kings, but there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There are 9 psukim before we even get to Lot. 9 psukim is a lot of real estate in the Torah. And these psukim don't just describe who the people were, but where they fought. A lot of geography. A lot of geography that seems irrelevant. So there are names that seem irrelevant. Why doesn't the Torah just say there was a big war, a lot of mean kings, a lot of strong weapons, Lot gets captured, and Avram rescues him and encounters some of these kings and talks with them about religion and receives or delivers charity to them. So there's a lot happening in this story. So I don't know how much we're going to get to, but let's start from the beginning. First of all, who was Kedar LaOmer? Who was Amraphel? Rashi says Amraphel was Avram's old nemesis. Amraphel was really Nimrod. The same Nimrod, or at least according to Rashi, we don't know this because these stories don't appear in the Torah. Avram's Kivshana Eish heroics. So this is Bahab. So we don't say Bahab, but when they say Yud Gimel Midos, we have to stop and say Yud Gimel Midos. So Yeshiva is a minhag Bahab, which is an old minhag, that the first complete week on the month after a Yom Tov, you fast Monday, Thursday, Monday, and you say Slichos to be Mechaper for whatever abuse of time you have in your home for Yom Tov, too much time on your hands. So there's still like a little group of Bahabers there in Yeshiva that keep... Vayavar Adonai Alpanav Vayikra. Adonai, Adonai, El Rachum Bechanun, Erech Atayim Rav Chesed, VMS, Notzer Chesed, Alofim, Lasei Avon, Vafesha, Vechata Oven, Akei, Veselechta, Lavoninu, Lechataseinu, Nechaltanu. Okay, so, this means that Amraphel is Nimrod. Nimrod was, at least according to Rashi, the person who throws Avram into the Kivshan Eish. His nickname is Amraphel because of that story. Rashi says, why? Because Sha'amar Le Avram Pul, fall down. Amarpul. Amraphel, Amarpul. Which means that, all of a sudden, that story that we don't have in the beginning of Lech Lecha or Noach, for whatever reason we don't have it, now is being recreated, namely this face-off between Avram and Nimrod, Avram and Amraphel, from what happened in Bavel, is now being recreated in Eretz Yisrael. Essentially, this is the sequel to the Kivshan Eish. The Kivshan Eish is when Avram's in Chutz Laretz and he's defenseless. And Amraphel just throws him to Kivshan Eish and Hashem performs a miracle. This is Kivshan Eish part 2. Avram facing off against Amraphel in Eretz Yisrael. But at this point, Avram can defend himself in Eretz Yisrael. He has an entourage and he's facing off against Amraphel and he's getting his revenge. Now, what's also happening is that how many people really knew about what happened in Shinar? Or how many people really believed about what happened in Bavel or Kastim with his Kivshan Eish? This is a chance for those same players from that scene that happened earlier, those same players to play out the same story, but this case, to play it out in Eretz Yisrael with everyone watching. Now, how do I know this is true? Because if you look at another Rashi, I'm going to connect a lot of Rashis. When Melech Sdom is running, so the Torah describes, this is Pasuk Yud, the Emek HaSidim, this valley called Sidim, had Be'eros Be'eros Chemar, had a lot of pits full of mortar, full of quicksand, full of like very, very mortary substance. So Rashi says, he quotes the Medrash, that the Melech of Sodom actually fell into those pits and was stuck there as a type of quicksand. And Hashem performed a miracle for some of the kings that they could emerge. And when they emerged, they said, oh, now we believe that Hashem performed a miracle for Avram and the Kibshanesh. Because there were doubters and skeptics, Rashi says, that heard the legend of Avram and the Kibshanesh, but doubted that it happened. But now that they themselves found themselves in a similar Kibshanesh, something that was inescapable, these bottomless pits of quicksand, and the miracle was performed, they said, oh, if Hashem could take us out of the Kibshanesh. So these are two Rashis that connect the story that's happening in with the four kings and the five kings to what, the story that we don't read about in Ur Kasdim, Amraphel and the Beros Chemar. Now you're also seeing how powerful Amraphel / Nimrod was, because he was essentially a one-man band. Vayivara Adonai apanav vayikra. Adonai, Adonai, El Rachum Mechanon, Erech Apayim, Vrith Chesed VMS. You see how powerful Nimrod was, because essentially most of the initial effort is Amraphel or Nimrod by themselves, and then the other kings join him. But a lot of his conquests, if you look at the Pesukim carefully, it seems like he was a really powerful tyrant. Talk about this in a moment. So you see that Avram wasn't facing off against the second-rate politician. Avram was facing off against Nimrod / Amraphel, the person who was capable of waging war against five kings, and then ultimately had to ask three of his friends to help him out. Essentially, this was Nazi Germany. He was facing off against the entire world, and Avram was still willing to withstand it. So by Rashi, two Rashis. Number one, pointing out that Amraphel is Nimrod. Number two, mentioning that falling into the pits trained them to believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could perform a miracle for Avram. Rashi's bridging. This is part two, but it's happening in Eretz Yisrael with more people watching. That's the first reason that the story is told. The second reason the story is told, and this is the reason the geography is so important, not just the Melech, is this is a foreshadowing. If you look at the Ramban, this is foreshadowing. Where does Amraphel / Nimrod start? Remember, what did Nimrod build? Which city did Nimrod build? Shinar. Vayavar Adonai apanav vayikra. Adonai, Adonai, El Rachum Bechanun, Erech Apayim, Rav Chesed, VMS, Netzer Chesed, Lelefin, Lasiavon, Vafesha, Vechata, Venakei, Vesalachta, Lavoninu, Lechataseinu, Nechaltanu. So Amraphel, more or less, Melech Shinar, is coming into Israel, where all this battle takes place, from Bavel. What is that foreshadowing, where a really big tyrant enters Israel and wages war in Israel from Bavel? This is foreshadowing Nebuchadnezzar. This is a foreshadowing. Look at the Rabban says this explicitly. This is foreshadowing Nebuchadnezzar, who will invade Israel from Babel and fight wars in Israel. Now keep in mind, what else foreshadows if Amraphel is really the person who, Nimrod, who threw Avram to the Kibshanesh, what else is that foreshadowing about Nebuchadnezzar? The Kibshanesh of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So this is the first time that a ruler from Bavel will invade Eretz Yisrael, having been involved in a Kibshanesh Mesiras Nefesh. The next time this will happen is when Nebuchadnezzar will invade Eretz Yisrael, take people back to Galus, and throw people into the Kibshanesh, and Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah will escape in the same way. So the second reason the story is told is it foreshadows not just Nebuchadnezzar, but it foreshadows wars that will be fought in Eretz Yisrael. Various wars, whether it's the Greeks, whether it's the Romans, wars that will be fought in Eretz Yisrael, and ultimately, at the end of time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will rescue Avram Avinu. So that's why it's important that Amraphel is really Nimrod, A, just because Avram has a sequel and his chance to triumph, but also because this is foreshadowing. Now it's hard to listen. Now it's foreshadowing for other reasons. If you pay attention to the geography, where's the war taking place? Anyone read Jnai Mikra yet? Where's the center of the war? The ground zero of the war, okay, the Poland of the war, is around Yam HaMelech. It's around Stone, it's around Yam HaMelech, it's around Ein Gedi, Chatzitzon Tamar. Ein Gedi is right near Yam HaMelech, on the east coast of Eretz Yisrael. There's a lot of date trees there, a lot of palm trees there. Chatzitzon Tamar, Ein Gedi, Yam HaMelech. But where else do they go? Where else does the war take place? It takes place all the way up north, Ad, who knows where Avram chases, Adan. Until Dan, which is all the way in the north, and then they make it south. How do you know they make it all the way south?
They visit a place that's very, very southerly, and it's associated with the Meraglim. What's that place called? Kadesh. Kadesh is a desert area, and Rashi stresses by Avar Adonai upon Avaykra.
Adonai, Adonai, El Rachum Mechanon, Erech Apayim Rav Chesed, V'yemes, Notze Chesed, V'notze Avon, V'fesha, V'chata, V'nakei, V'selachta, L'avoninu, L'chataseinu, N'chaltanu.
Rashi says that Ein Mishpat, because Ein, does anyone know what an Ein means in Israel when you want to teal, what Ein means?
Spring.
Ein is not, a, it's like a spring. Why is it called Ein? Because you're walking in this forest and you see like this little circle of water. It looks like an eye. It looks like an eye is looking at you. These little pools of water in the middle of nowhere. So he visits a pool of water called Ein Mishpat. Why is it called Ein Mishpat? Rashi says because they visited Mei Meriva. The war actually made it to the southern part of the desert where Moshe and Aaron would one day be judged because of what happens in Mei Meriva. So the war takes place, it's centered in Yam HaMelech, but there's war that's taking place up north, and there's war that's taking place down south, which means basically the borders of Eretz Yisrael are being established, and there's a foreshadowing that there'll be wars fought over the borders of Eretz Yisrael throughout history. So this just isn't just a foreshadowing about Nebuchadnezzar, a one-off invasion of a tyrant from Bavel who's going to throw people into a Kivshan Aish. This is a foreshadowing of wars that will take place. And then there's another interesting Rashi, I'm quoting a lot of interesting Rashis, that Avram chases the armies until two places where he stops the chase. What are the two places he stops the chase? Ad? No, it's not Ad Kadesh. Ad Dan and Ad Chova. What does Rashi say Avram gave up the chase at Dan? Because he saw that Yeravim ben Nevat, who comes from Dan, would worship Avodah Zarah in that place, would hold up Avodah Zarah. And he basically couldn't go any further. According to Rashi, he lost his strength. And Chova is another place named Chova. Rashi doesn't tell us what happened in this place called Chova, but another place seemingly up north that Avram stopped at because he saw the Jewish people would fail. Now Rashi says because Avram lost his strength because he saw how the Jews would fail. What it could also be related to Rashi is he realized that there are two different boundaries to Israel. There are boundaries of Israel during Yemos HaMashiach, or when Jews triumph, but when the Jews are not at that level and they force Gullus or a Gullus state or a contained state, then our boundaries only stop at Dan, only stop in up north in Kiryat Shmona. So when Avram is fighting these wars, it's not just foreshadowing, Avram is also fighting these battles basically to establish the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, and that this is going to be a historical struggle to find the boundaries, and the boundaries are not always going to be as extensive as they should be. He's going to stop at Dan, he's going to stop at Chova, because of Am Yisrael's sins are going to create a fallen state of history that we have to redeem. So we know, right, they're right when they call us Zionist expansionists. We are Zionist expansionists, but we just don't take advantage of it, and we just wait for Mashiach to come and for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to announce that expansion. But yes, Eretz Yisrael will be much larger one day, but right now, we follow the law, and we respect people's rights, and we just live in the land that we're able to acquire through legal moral terms. Now, the final thing, I know it's a little bit late, so I'll say it very quickly. So the first reason that the story is told is to just give this sequel to the Kivshan Ha'esh, with more people watching in Eretz Yisrael. The second reason is all based on the Rashi. The second reason is their foreshadowing of wars fought in Eretz Yisrael to establish the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. The third reason is what happens in a very interesting valley called Emek Shaveh. They all gather in a valley called Emek Shaveh. Why is that valley called the Valley of Democracy? Emek Shaveh, the Valley of Democracy. So Rashi says that after the war, all the kings gather and they built this big platform. Rashi didn't talk about the platform, it's in the Medrash, and they all coronated Avram because he was the rock star. He had saved everyone from death. So it's an Avram celebration. They gave him their awards. You see, Melch Tzedek wanted to award Avram. Avram didn't want to take money, but they all paid homage. They all thanked Avram. This is the first time that Avram is becoming internationally renowned through creating peace, through putting a war to rest that had been flaring for 14 years. So this is the first time that Avram's role of Hayei Bracha, Avram's role to play an international, even before his Avram Ongoyim in his name, this is the first time Emek Shaveh. Everyone gathers because, a little bit prescient for what we're going through now, hopefully with the Abraham Accords, hopefully people are gathering and they're recognizing the state of Israel. And that recognition is not coming at the blunt end of a sword. That recognition is coming through peace and through reconciliation and through recognizing our role in science and technology and creating welfare for humanity. So this is Emek Shaveh. The valley of equality, the valley where everyone gets together in a consensus and they accept and embrace Avram. So you won't have to see the first part of the story to know how ferocious the wars were, how many people were involved, how far it extended to set up this moment where Avram's an Emek Shaveh and everyone's coronating him, and he's starting to build not his personal reputation, but his ability to spread the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu because he's becoming well-known. So there's just three reasons that the story is quoted. A, sequel number two to the Kishonei, sequel to the Kishonei. Number two, borders of Israel, wars, Nebuchadnezzar. Number three, Avram's coronation. Okay? And a couple others, but we'll stop here.
Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning.
Good morning.